I am happy to welcome so many people here today. We have in our group representatives of the government, representatives of other civic organizations, members of the press, radio, and TV corps, and many league members and many league friends. The master artist who serves us all so well as the director of the United States Information Agency, the Honorable Edward R. Murrow.
Madam Chairman, distinguished guests, ladies and gentlemen, I am indeed grateful for such a generous and gracious introduction, but I am at the same time aware that a much talking bureaucrat is an ill-tuned instrument, so I shall attempt to brief you briefly on the United States Information Agency, being fully aware that a briefing was once described in Washington as consisting of three parts. The first you knew already, the second you promptly forgot, and the third wasn't true in the first place. I shall attempt to eliminate at least the third part of the briefing. I scarce know how to begin, my language still being somewhat confused as a result of 3 weeks in Europe. I once had a German friend who rose to address a meeting. It was well known to all educators present that he spoke nothing but German. So he rose and said, "Mesdames, Messieurs," and that startled everyone that he commanded that much French. He said, "Mesdames, Messieurs, meine Damen und Herren, delegates," and then he paused, obviously searching for the feminine for delegates. And so he backed off and took another run at his opening sentence and said, "Mesdames, Messieurs, meine Damen und Herren, delegates und Delegatessen." It is alleged that Winston Churchill, just before he returned to the Admiralty upon the outbreak of war in 1939, received an invitation to come to this country and deliver 30 lectures at $2,000 per lecture. And he tossed this cabled invitation across the desk to his personal secretary and said, "This is impossible. No one would pay this for lectures." And he was assured that it was a firm, fast, and legal offer, and all he need do was to come to the United States, deliver the lectures, pick up the money, and return to his island. Upon being assured of this, he said, "If that be true, if that indeed be true, then America is the only country in my experience that has succeeded in passing from barbarism into decadence without going through a phase of civilization." I would suppose that the United States Information Agency is attempting, in part at least, to prove that Mr. Churchill on that occasion was wrong. We are, in fact, engaged in an effort to make United States policy everywhere intelligible and wherever possible palatable. The agency in this administration has an opportunity to be heard on policy before that policy is made in the National Security Council, in the Executive Committee of that council as well. In saying that, I do not mean to imply that United States foreign policy is conducted on the basis of public opinion polls or in an effort to win a popularity contest abroad. Our budget is $121 million for the current fiscal year, somewhat less than the cost of one Polaris submarine. We are seeking a modest increase, and that matter is in the hands of the Congress. There is upon occasion a disposition to believe that the information agency dominates the flow of information and news from this country. This is far from the case. We have about 1,000 people abroad. There are 30,000 United States missionaries abroad. There are more than 1 million United States armed personnel and their dependents. Our publications and their impact do not rank equal to the Reader's Digest and various other publications that go out from this country. Nor do our news wires compare with those of the great commercial news wires in this country. We use all known means of communication. The best known is perhaps the Voice of America, but we operate in film, television, books, libraries, indeed the whole scope of communication. The Voice of America is perhaps the best known. We operate it 789 hours weekly in 36 languages, and we place some 14,000 hours each week on local medium wave stations abroad. Last January, we brought into operation the most powerful single shortwave transmitter complex in the world in Greenville, North Carolina, the equivalent of about 90 of the most powerful stations in this country. At the end of this year, we will bring into operation in Liberia a complex of 250 kilowatt transmitters and 250s. But even after this is done, we will still be outbroadcast by the Soviet Union and Communist China. Some indication of the regard in which the Voice of America is held by the Soviet Union is to be found in the fact that they operate a jamming service in an effort to prevent us from getting through to their people. Were we to operate an identical jamming service, it would cost us $150 million a year. And as I indicated a moment ago, our total budget is $121 million a year. The transmitter complex in Africa will represent one of the most exciting ventures in mass communications. It will give us a dominant voice in Africa south of the Sahara. This is an area where there may be, no one is sure, there may be one copy of one newspaper per 1,000 people. And at some point, a perceptive historian will conclude that the introduction of the shortwave transistor receiver represents one of the great revolutions in the communications of the 60s. We are also in the business of exporting film. 600 million people a month see our films produced in 52 languages. We operate some 7,500 projectors all over the world. And we have some 220 film libraries in 104 countries. We are also in the business of television. There was, in the course of last year, a 21% increase in the total of television transmitters around the world. In the emerging countries particularly, they are hungry for material about this country. They want to know not only our customs, or if you prefer, our folklore, but how we live, why we pursue the policies we pursue. In the field of television, we started about a year and a half ago an experimental program, half an hour in length, designed to teach English. It is now being carried in 36 countries, including every country in Latin America possessing a television system. It's being carried twice a day in Japan. It's being carried in Vienna, where it is receiving considerable mail from both Czechoslovakia and Hungary. There is an opportunity in television to hold a mirror, and an honest mirror, behind this country and what it does. We operate a wireless file, radio teletype, which moves 10,000 words each day to 5 geographic areas. We are in the magazine business, publishing 66 of them, also 20 newspapers and wall newspapers in 25 languages. We have one small magazine in Southeast Asia, which is used in lieu of currency, because ferry operators will accept it in payment for passage in lieu of cash. And I think there is no publication in the United States that can make that claim. We publish a magazine in the Soviet Union, another in Poland. We are also in the matter of exhibits, also in the matter of publishing cartoon strips, 5 strips used by 2,700 papers in 87 countries. On behalf of the Department of State, we aid in the selection of some 5,000 students and graduates who are brought to this country each year on fellowships. And this represents one of the most fascinating gambles in human relations that anyone has ever seen. Because it is our hope and belief that these people, when they return to their own countries, will come to occupy positions of leadership, and that leadership will, to a degree, be influenced by the knowledge they have gained while in this country of our customs, our institutions, our hopes, and our beliefs. We are also sending exhibits abroad. Last year, we had 3 in the Soviet Union, one dealing with plastics, one with transportation, and one with medicine. More than 1 million Russians passed through those 3 exhibits. Each exhibit staffed by 25 to 30 Russian-speaking American guides. And the curiosity of the Russian visitors went far beyond the subject matter of the exhibit. It went far beyond the traditional question of how much did those shoes cost you and how long did you have to work to pay for them? How much did the suit of clothes cost you? It went far beyond that. Questions as to whether workers in fact have the right to strike, whether indeed it is possible for an American to move from one end of his country to the other without government permission, and whether he is permitted to travel abroad without special permission from his own government. This developing curiosity is, I think, one of the most significant things in the Soviet Union today. And I myself doubt that it is possible to train half a man's mind and train them as well as they are being trained in the Soviet Union, particularly in the physical sciences, without having that curiosity spread out, that intellectual horsepower applied to such matters as the relationship between the individual and the state, the relationship between an individual and an omnipotent being. And I think the very excellence of the training in science is probably producing a degree of erosion in the control over the life and the thinking of the Soviet citizens. We are also engaged in the business of teaching English. We are teaching English to more than 250,000 people this year. In many cases in African countries, it is being taught to members of the parliament and to members of the executive branch. Increasingly, English becomes the second language of the world. It is now the second language in the Soviet Union and in communist China as well. We are also operating libraries, 182 of them in 88 countries, 79 reading rooms, 154 binational centers. Something over 30 million people a year visit our libraries and binational centers. We in this country cannot fully appreciate what it means, particularly to students, to be able to go into an open shelf library and take home a book for their own use. We have a small library, for example, in Africa, which recorded in a period of 4 months more requests for the Federalist Papers than was recorded by the New York Public Library in an entire year. There is a desire to study our basic documents and to learn. In the field of private cooperation, some 430 American firms are sending materials to their 7,000 representatives abroad. This is material having to do with nuclear testing and our policy in relation to it, with Cuba, with the Berlin Wall. We do this with a relatively small staff, a total of less than 11,000, about 1,000 American citizens abroad, about 7,000 local employees abroad, and the remainder in Washington, and the largest percentage of that remainder being involved with the work of the Voice of America. During the last 2 years, our primary efforts have been directed at Latin America and at Africa. We have created labor information officers in Latin America, student affairs officers, because the communists have made their greatest penetration in the field of students and organized labor. The effectiveness of the information agency is occasionally demonstrated in a rather dramatic fashion, as it was with the Cooper flight and the earlier flights of our astronauts, when it is possible to have exhibits and films of pre-flight training on the ground ready for showing the moment the capsule is picked up. One of the greatest dividends we have had in the field of space exploration and astronautics has been the fact that we do it in the open with considerable risk of embarrassment or disaster. And this has created the impression, and a true impression around the world, that what we do is done in the open, where reporters from all countries are free to come to watch and to report. This then is a brief profile of your agency. I proceed upon the assumption that you know very little about it, because it was clearly congressional intent when the agency was created as an independent agency in 1953 that none of the taxpayers' money should be spent in propagandizing the American people, and indeed none of it should be spent in telling them what is being done abroad on their behalf and in their name. This is not a handicap, except at budget time, when we recognize fully that we have no constituency, that we have no farmers, we have no munitions manufacturers, we have no trade unions to lobby for us. As one of my colleagues once said, it is rather like broadcasting into a dead microphone or doing television inside a barrel. However, that was congressional intent, and it happens to be an intent with which I personally agree, because I would deplore the day when any U.S. government information agency devoted its resources to propagandizing the American people. We operate abroad, as I have said, on the basis of truth, because we have no alternative. We do not contend that we have solved in this country all of our political, social, economic, or racial questions. We report racial incidents as they occur. We attempt to put them into perspective. We put emphasis upon what remedial action has been taken by municipal, state, or federal authorities. But we report them because, as I say, we operate on the basis of truth, and were we not to report them, they would be reported by others, and in the process be distorted. That then is briefly what your agency attempts to do. But there is, I think, an aspect of our agency of which you should be appraised. Our specifically women's activities and our use of the concept of volunteerism by non-government organizations working with women overseas. From your own experience, you know that no limits can be set on women's interests. Women, for the sole reason they are women, are not necessarily a separate foreign audience. Women, I am told on good authority, are people first and women second. Their own interests and activities are questions of individual abilities and capacities. Depending on the country and the status of women in that country, Women may comprise significant portions of many groups: labor, teachers, youth and students, leaders and political leaders. These groups we do try to reach because they are in the forefront of the process of change in their land. As our world grows, as our oceans become rivers, so does the role of women in the world grow. Women and girls now receive new and increased opportunities for education. With education leading to a change in women's status, with economic development and industrialization putting more women into jobs where they earn money, women are acquiring economic rights. In many countries, rights hitherto denied to them. And with political rights, women's role has changed enormously. Of the 100 members of the United Nations, 95 nations now give women full and equal political rights. They vote, they even hold office. The world scene now sees a woman prime minister in the Far East and a woman foreign minister in the Middle East, as well as other cabinet ministers in other countries. Women are increasingly serving as members of parliaments and legislatures. In only 8 countries today do women have no political rights. And thus will social historians recount that in our day, a dramatic change occurred in the potential of half the world's population. Women today lead. They influence public attitudes and government policy. Women assist in the creation of societies which hopefully will be harmonious with basic values in human existence. As in the United States, there are women in every country with the energy, desire, and ability to speed up the social, economic, and political evolution with which modernity is now identified. This is a new birth of freedom. It is a force to be reckoned in the balance of world affairs. Democracy and this country can underestimate it only to our loss. USIA has, of course, a special interest in women in newly independent countries. They have played prominent roles in the national revolutions leading to the independence of their countries. They were active in protest movements, sit-down strikes, demonstrations, and even in some cases, in the battle lines. Some have served time in prison. They have thus come to occupy important roles in present governments. In several countries, the women's section of the ruling political party has the governmental responsibility for education and social welfare programs. But even beyond their role in government, women are gathering in voluntary and professional organizations. Their goal, to accomplish by cooperative action what cannot be done by individual action. These organizations, particularly when devoted to the public service, can provide a training ground in the practice of democratic self-government. Thus, we reach another aspect of interest by USIA in women overseas. An information and cultural program designed to work with women's organizations in other countries can help strengthen the political framework of that country by building on organizations dedicated to community action. With good fortune and hard work, we help to develop leadership, strengthen democratic processes, and gain political stability, while at the same time helping to deepen the understanding of the United States, its people, and its policies. While it is true that as an agency, we set no limits on women's interests, we are realistic in acknowledging that there are concerns common to all mankind, but especially to women. Take, for example, the care and well-being of children and families, education, medical care, and preservation of life. A concern for people and their institutions. These are universal and unifying. These are as well a politically non-divisive base of shared concern that we may use in communicating with women everywhere. The ancient, once static societies, so long rigidified by status and sterility, now rise from their sleep to become habituated to change. People and their leaders dare to think in terms of every human being having a decent life. History will record that it was our generation that first conceived such a proposition on a worldwide scale. It is surely the most ambitious goal to which mankind has ever set his sights. Life for multitudes today is still sparse, rugged, and even desperate. But the difference now is awareness. Ignorance is being banished from the councils of concerned men. People now know from radio and films and television and books. People now care, if not for themselves, then for their children. People now are restless with their stoicism that has so long borne the burdens of poverty and disease. Nutrition and the feeding of families, the better use of whatever food is available, the willingness to use new foods, all this lies with women, for it is women who choose and prepare family meals. The energy or the apathy of a people depends in large part on their diet, and adequate nutrition is not only a question of economics, but of information and of knowledge. Health is also in the care of women. They raise the children and with proper education could prevent much of the world's disease. To take one example, the World Health Organization informs us the eyesight of 40 million people is threatened. If not already blind, many of these people soon will be, and they will be condemned to a life of stumbling, lonely blindness. 80% of the rural populations of some countries have damaged sight. Yet, in so many cases, these diseases could have been treated earlier and prevented with elementary knowledge of cleanliness and care. Patterns of life change as well. Nations are growing. Cities become swollen. Factories draw people from the farms. Thus, new family patterns replace old traditions. The outcome of some of these changes lies in the hands of women. The results can be more freedom for each person, more life for the woman, greater happiness for husband and child. Or these changes can lead to split homes, unhappiness, loneliness, child delinquency, and misery. Women with vision, women ready to adapt and understand and enjoy rather than resist, can ease the adjustments to change which all families, all communities, and indeed all nations are being called upon to make. With all this then, as the principal of our agency's concern with women, what then are our practices? We operate upon two levels, that of personal contact and that of utilizing the production of the many media we use. For personal contact, we have women's activities officers in several African posts, and will soon be adding more in the Far East. In addition, there are in many USIS posts women officers with the knowledge, interest, and skill to make certain the USIA program is reaching women. We have more than 50 such women officers. We also have the extracurricular resource of the wives of U.S. officers stationed abroad. They are a most potent force to influence public attitudes abroad. And we have designed a course to help these women meet their responsibilities as representatives of the United States on the international scene. The course is fairly new. In recent months, the wives of husbands working abroad for 8 federal agencies have undergone the rigors of this course. I have had reliable reports on its progress from a source I dare not impeach, for my wife has been one of its pupils. We utilize as well the Department of State's American Specialist Program. Under this, we have selected and sent qualified women to hold leadership training institutes in foreign countries, and they have been most effective. And we shall inaugurate this year a similar program to bring women here for training on how to give consultant service to developing community organizations in their own countries. As for our media product, you will recall the varied operations I mentioned earlier: press, television, radio, motion pictures, books, and libraries. In our press division, our Arabic magazine, Al Hayat, devoted its February issue to American women. 4 times a year, we send a women's press package to our field posts, containing carefully selected materials to contribute to influencing public attitudes in the vital nation-building process. We have regular features in our Women of Achievement series and Profile of an American series. There is, of course, the continuing news coverage of events and subjects of particular interest to women abroad. On our Voice of America radio, we have commenced a new series, Viewpoint, with a woman's angle. We recently completed 13 half-hour scripts on the role and potential of women from material presented at a conference last January at the University of California, and another at Mount Holyoke last month on women in public life around the world. We continually cover foreign women leaders visiting this country, and many of our 36 language services tailor special country programs to women in the audience. In television, an English teaching series is being planned, which would combine the learning of English with the teaching of baby and child care. A half-hour documentary is now in production on the woman in the home. The request for this came from our post in Tokyo, but it will be useful in other countries as well. In our information center service, we have contracted to sponsor a book tentatively titled Half the World's People. Its theme is that the changing status of women within their own societies constitutes a universal revolution that is one of the significant events of this century. When the book is published in early fall, we shall make extensive use of it in our low-cost local language book program. This is an example of how the agency encourages the writing and publication of books useful to us overseas. Further, we prepare lectures and slide talks for use by cultural affairs officers abroad, and also respond to overseas requests for appropriate pamphlets from non-governmental organizations. In motion pictures, we have film magazines and newsreels that cover continental areas. Horizons, for example, in Latin America, and Today in Africa. A recent edition of the African newsreel contained features on inoculations for parents and children against measles. Last year's film on Mrs. Kennedy's visit to India and Pakistan had much of special interest to women, but in fairness, they had exceptional audience appeal as well. Let me close by mentioning a project dear to those of us in USIA. We call it Books USA. Most Americans take books for granted. Books are available to us in the classroom, in our splendid libraries, in bookstores and elsewhere, where we can buy them for a few pennies. Few of us ever bother to speculate what life would be like if suddenly books were to disappear. The world around us would quickly seem bare and empty. Yet millions of men, women, and children around the globe suffer the emptiness of life without books, for they are the capsules of knowledge. The hunger of people abroad for knowledge is insatiable. We seek to satisfy that hunger through many means, as I have already mentioned, but also through books. Last year, we distributed some 6 million books to foreign libraries, institutions, research centers, and individuals. But our competitors from communism overwhelm us with their output. Last year, they published over 80 million books in non-communist bloc languages. This year, they will distribute some 150 million books. Here is a book gap we can never hope to close by public appropriated funds alone. But it may be possible to make progress through the help of American citizens. Our agency has devised a plan called Books USA, through which the largest paperback publishers in this country offer packets of 10 books for sale at no profit. USIA selects the titles in these packets. For a few dollars, anyone can send a Books USA packet in such fields as American literature, history, and biography to a school, a library, or an individual overseas. Each packet will be distributed overseas by our information agency in the name of the donor of the books. $4 will get you a packet that normally costs $5, and it will be delivered into the hands of the proper recipient. We are all concerned with the growth of democracy and the nurturing of freedom. Your organization does that in this country. We try to do it overseas. Those who make decisions in government and those who are affected by those decisions concern us both. Politics, after all, is people, as one of your recent publications says. And it is people who, in the end of the day, will decide the conditions of life here on Earth. The purpose of your organization is to promote political responsibility through the informed participation of citizens in government. The purpose of my organization is to inform citizens abroad and hope that such knowledge will contribute to a relationship between people and government. Our purposes are not so dissimilar after all. As I hope for the success of the work of my agency, let me wish you success in the work of your organization. We both have our responsibilities to meet, and I trust we shall meet them well. So far as what is generally referred to as our image abroad, I would like to say only this. The manner in which we are regarded abroad will depend much more upon what we do than what we say. It will depend, I think, much more upon our example than upon our dollars. The extent to which we can demonstrate a society which has greater concern over a wider area for the welfare of the individual, a society which is producing a greater degree of economic, political, social, and racial equality, to that extent will we be favorably regarded abroad.